My name is Robert David Mueller. I presently live in Plymouth, Minnesota. I was born in Galena, Illinois, on December 16, 1922, the youngest of three children. We lived in Galena for approximately the first 5 years of my life when my father located a different job in the city of Manitowoc, Wisconsin. We moved there and lived there for approximately 18 months when his employer transferred him to West Bend, Wisconsin, where we lived until 1936. I attended grade school basically in West Bend, Wisconsin. In the summer of 1936, when I was about to become a freshman in high school, my father's employer again transferred him, this time back to Manitowoc, Wisconsin. So I attended high school at Lincoln High School in Manitowoc, the 4 years I was in high school, and graduated in June of 1940. Neither my father nor my mother had graduated from high school, let alone college. However, my older sister, after graduating from high school in West Bend in 1936, chose to pursue a college education at Milwaukee State Teachers College, as the college was known in those days, and she graduated with a degree in elementary education. I had one older brother, however, he did not pursue a college education. I can't identify precisely what prompted me to pursue a college degree, but I suspect that since my father was in accounting and business-related work, that's what prompted me to go on to college. I do not recall that our family was directly affected by the Depression period of the early 1930s. We lived in the small town of West Bend, Wisconsin for the most part during that period of time. And while my father was not a wealthy man, at least he had steady employment, and we were not personally in our family directly affected by the Depression. I graduated from high school, as I say, in June of 1940. My brother had attended 1 year of the University of Wisconsin Extension Division in Manitowoc, and motivated primarily because of much more economic way to go to college, I chose to do that for the school year of 1940-41, as did several of my high school friends. So I attended college at the University of Wisconsin Extension Division, which was held in the old vocational school in Manitowoc, for the school year of 1940-1941. In order to enter Madison in the School of Commerce as a sophomore, I was required to have taken a course in the mathematics of investment, which I could not get at the University Extension Division. So I chose to take that course by correspondence and was just barely able to pass that course in time to enroll as a sophomore at Madison in the fall of 1941. I did enroll then at the University of Wisconsin in Madison as a sophomore in the fall of 1941. My good friend from Manitowoc, Paul Ziemer, who had also attended the Extension Division as I had, Paul and I tried to get a room together in the men's dormitories at Madison, but were unable to do so. Paul got a room with another gentleman in Showerman House, and I was able to get a room with another guy in Chamberlain House. My roommate's name was Carl Kasowitz. As it subsequently turned out, Carl was killed in World War II. I have life on campus in the fall of 1941 and into 42 was a joyful experience, and I have fond memories. In those days, there were relatively few automobiles on campus. parking for those that did have them was not a problem because there just weren't that many students living in the dormitories that had cars. I recall that on Pearl Harbor Day, there was an exchange dinner for those that cared to participate up at Elizabeth Waters. And I recall being up there for that day when the news came that the Japanese had attacked Pearl Harbor. I don't remember the specific details of the immediate following events, but I know we all listened to President Roosevelt the next day on the radio. And for many who were already active in the military branches, such as in ROTC or others, there was an immediate uncertainty as to what their immediate future was going to be. Life in the dormitories and at Madison in that time was a very comfortable and enjoyable experience for me. In Chamberlain House, we had a rather diverse cultural group of people. My roommate, Kyle Kasowitz, was from Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, as I recall, was a Jewish boy. And I had never come in close contact with a Jewish boy before. We got along well and had a good time together, and I was sorry to later learn that Carl had died during the war. We had some Chinese kids in our dormitory who seemed to enjoy smoking some very exotic tobacco. And while my father had been a pipe and cigar smoker, I don't remember that he had ever smoked tobacco, which was of quite an interesting aroma, as was the tobacco these Chinese boys spoke. Life on the campus was relatively quiet and serene. There was the usual big homecoming celebration down on the lower campus below Bascom Hill before homecoming with the big bonfire. We all got involved in that. Some of my memories of that are more vivid from the following year, and I'll describe those in a moment. I remember hearing the campus story that Abe Lincoln, who sits proudly in front of Bascom Hall, would stand up when a virgin walked by. And I seem to remember that the story was that very few girls chose to walk in front of Abe Lincoln for that reason. I even remember an issue of the Daily Cardinal, and I think it goes back to the fall of 1941, which pictured on the front page Abe Lincoln standing up. Now, I'm sure this was a make-believe photograph, but the headlines in the story had to do with that some unknown girl had walked by in front of Abe Lincoln and that he had stood up in respect for the young lady at that time. In the summer of 1942, I was able to get a job at the Berger Boat Company in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Of course, many industries in the Manitowoc area which were involved in shipbuilding in peacetimes were devoted to building wartime vessels, the most famous of which was the submarines built at the Manitowoc Shipbuilding Company. However, the Berger Boat Company, also in Manitowoc and a little bit upstream from the Manitowoc Shipbuilding Company, had built wooden-hulled pleasure boats in peacetime, and they were building wooden-hulled subchasers and minesweepers. So I was able to get a job in the Berger Boat Company as an electrician's helper. Backtracking just a moment to the spring of 1942, motivated by a little bit of a need for additional funds, etc., I was able to apply for and got a job in the dormitory store, which was located in the lower level of Mack House in the Chamberlain, in the Kronsage dormitory unit. And I worked there from early spring of 1942 until the end of the school year. The store had a manager, there was a dormitory store committee, several of us were just clerks, but it was an excellent opportunity to earn some money, to get to meet a lot of people as they came in to patronize the barbershop, which was right across the hall, or to buy school supplies, candy, tobacco products, bring in laundry or dry cleaning or whatever at the dormitory store. I really enjoyed that, and I did that for much of the second semester of the 41-42 school year. But back to the summer of 42. I was able to get a job at the Berger Boat Company, and as I worked there as an electrician's helper throughout the summer of 1942. I was then notified about midsummer by the dormitory that if I wanted to, I could have the manager job at the dormitory store for the following school year, 42-43. Well, I took that job because I was familiar with the operation and that I was going to enjoy the work, but it meant I had to be back at Madison a little bit early to get things set up and organized, hire some additional clerks and so on and so on, which I did. The fringe benefits of being manager were that not only was I paid a little bit more than the clerks, but I got free haircuts at the barbershop, and I was able to get my laundry and dry cleaning done for nothing through the laundry and the dry cleaning firm that took care of the trade that went in and out of the dormitory store. Beginning in the school year of 42-43, there was a considerable amount of confusion because of the military situation. There were lots of guys leaving because of their presence in ROTC or their enlisted, etc., so that there was a constant a number of people leaving school. That was an ongoing problem and made for a considerable amount of uncertainty in the lives of the administrators at the university. And I recall very vividly attending a big open lecture up at Bascom Hall, where were for most of the guys, which was basically when they were saying to us was shit or get off the pot. We either had to decide we were still in school and we're going to go to class, or leave school and enter into the military. Well, because of poor eyesight, I was unable to successfully enlist in any of the more dramatic programs, such as V7, which was a program where you could continue to get your education at various colleges while you were getting military Navy training, as some of my friends did. And as a last resort, I chose to sign up for the ERC, as it was called, which was the Enlisted Reserve Corps. That had a very simple kind of a physical requirement, but I was able to get into that with my poor eyesight, and I waited until I was called up to active duty, which was in March of 1943. The school year of 42-43, such of it that I was able to attend before I went into active duty, was a very happy year for me. I knew my way around the campus, I had lots of good friends, and I have some vivid memories of a number of events that happened in that period. One, for example, was the game versus Ohio State in the fall of 1942. That was a great game. Pat Harder, Dave Schreiner, Hoskins, Mark Hoskins, etc. It was an outstanding football game, and there was a considerable amount of booing and so forth of Bill Stern up in the radio booth, who took a lot of heat because I think a lot of us as kids and students felt he really hadn't given Wisconsin's football team enough respect. I also remember driving down to Evanston for a football game against Northwestern. Wisconsin won in a very heroic finish, 21-20. That was a very exciting football game, and I enjoyed that very much. But homecoming in that fall of 42 probably summarized much of what life was like at Madison. Of course, was a big bonfire. There was a mass march up State Street towards Capitol Square. Most of the merchants had put plywood across the front windows. The police, I believe, had taken down parking meters. It was just sort of a semi-mob scene, and a number of my friends were picked up by the officers for one obscene thing or another as we marched around the Capitol. As I remember, and I didn't participate in some of these wild activities, but I remember seeing them, some cars were tipped over, and it got to be a little bit chaotic up around Capitol Square. One of my friends who also worked in the dormitory store, was an avid Democrat from Gary, Indiana. And one of the things that he wanted to do and did do to celebrate the homecoming was to urinate on the doorknob of the lower level of the Capitol building where the Republican governor at that time, Julius P. Heil, presumably entered and left the state Capitol building. There were also more positive activities such as scrap metal drives. Every dormitory got involved and every sorority got involved in the collecting of scrap metal. I know over at, I was living at Showerman House at the time with my friend Paul Zima. We were able to get a room together for that school year. Some of us even went over to Camp Randall and hauled some cannons back across University Avenue. I got away with that. At least we weren't caught, but we had to return the cannons because it was obviously an improper thing to do. But the school year of 42-43 was a very happy time for me. I can remember a lot of occasions where we enjoyed singing in the dormitories before football games, dormitory parties. Singing at Wisconsin always seemed to be a tradition, and the atmosphere before the war was certainly as spontaneous and joyful in that respect as it continued to be after the war. There was a strong sense of pride among the students that were living in the dormitories, particularly before the war. I think it was more strong than it was after the war. There were many that lived there throughout the entire 4 years they were in college, and that was true for me. I lived in the dormitories before and after the war. And we used to boast that we were the GDIs, or the Gamma Delta Iotas, otherwise known as the goddamn Independents. There was a certain amount of friendly rivalry between the GDIs, Gamma Delta Iotas, and the Langdon Street crowd. And one of the songs that we used to sing was a song that went like this. Langdon Street is the street where all the guys and the gals will meet, the Kappa Sigs, the Phi Delts too, and you will bet that they will meet where blood and liquor fill the street. But as for me, I'd rather be at the BT, so dear to me, where I could sing and lose those Langdon Street blues. Now the BT was the Badger Tavern, which is down on University Avenue, not too far from the dormitories, and that was our sort of informal hangout. We used to go down there and sip some beers, and the BT was a popular spot for all of the dormitory guys and gals. I had joined Alpha Kappa Psi, which was a professional commerce fraternity in the school year of 42-43, and we held monthly meetings down at the Memorial Union. We would have guest speakers from the University Commerce School faculty, Fay Elwell, Professor Gibson, and other people like that. We got to know them quite well, and that was a fun experience. I was an accounting student, and let's see, 1942-43, that was my sophomore year, and I was taking some basic accounting courses at that time. But I was called up to active duty in March of 1943, so had to leave Madison and report to Fort Sheridan, Illinois, to begin a military career in the Air Force. I attended a finance basic training program at Fort Harrison, just outside of Indianapolis, and shipped overseas in summer of 1943, arriving in Casablanca in the early fall of 1943. Subsequently got to southern Italy with the 15th Air Force and got back to the United States in November of 1945, where I was discharged from the military in time to be home for Thanksgiving of 1945. If I might just add a PS to just an earlier scene, The uncertainty of the military before the war was such that when I was to be called up was not clear. As a result of that, I wound up quitting my job as manager of the dormitory store, but continued to go to school. However, there were some delays in my being called up, and I missed the stream of income from that job. So I applied for and was able to get a job in the dormitory cafeteria in the Kronstadt units until I was called up. I worked in the dish room, which involved accepting the dirty dishes from all of the guys, dumping off the garbage, etc., and putting them into the dishwasher, emptying the dishwasher and making them available and so on. One of the vivid memories I have of that job was how hot those dishes were when they came out of the dishwasher. But I had that job until I wound up going into the military in March of 1943. So I was discharged in November of 1945, and because of the experience I had at Madison before the war, there was no doubt in my mind but what I wanted to go back to Madison and finish my education. I don't remember that I had any particular difficulty finding housing, but I did get back and enrolled for the second semester of the 45-46 school year, which of course began in late January. I was able to get a single room in Seebecker House in Adams Hall, and I lived in that room from the time I returned in January of 1946 until I graduated in May of 1947. I don't remember the details of the GI Bill or how much it was, etc. It was important, yes. I did have another job after the war over in the Van Hise cafeteria, working with such great people as Carson Gully. That was a good paying job. I got a reduction in my dormitory room fee, and with my GI Bill, I was pretty much able to finance the rest of my education pretty much by myself. I know a lot of the guys coming back from the war were married, and they lived out at Badger Village, at Truax, and places like that. They were affectionately known by some of us as Rabbit Village. I had no personal experience with that because I was not married, and I lived all of the remaining part of my college in the dormitories at the old dorms, as they were called. We had some difficulty getting back into the academic environment in the spring of 1946, and I remember several meetings that we had with the Commerce School faculty to sort of give us some sort of a refresher course, because it had been a while since we were back in the college environment, and we weren't able to pick up the pieces as rapidly as we otherwise might have. But we got over that hurdle, I think, without too much of a lingering problem. I attended school nonstop then, starting in January of 1946, finishing that school year, went to summer school in the summer of 1946, and then in my final year in the fall of 1946 into graduation in June of 1947. I don't remember any particular problems in terms of class size, etc., that I was aware of when I got back after the war. Particularly in the spring of 1946, however, there was a considerable amount of partying because the guys coming back from the service came back at irregular times. And one of the first things they wanted to do when they got discharged was to come back to Madison to see who was around and get themselves ready for re-enrollment after the war. So there was rather a constant stream of reunions, seeing old friends, going out on some modest drinking bouts or more serious drinking bouts to renew old friendships and so on. And those were, again, happy times to see so many of the guys come back after the war. As I mentioned in my letter to the On Wisconsin publication in the January-February 1993 issue, the atmosphere in the dormitories starting with January of 1946 was unusual because Adams was filled with guys like myself, most of whom were returning servicemen, and the girls were still over in Tripp. We shared dining room facilities at Van Hise, and that was as close to sexual integration of dormitories at that point as had occurred. Things are quite different now, as I understand it. But we had a lot of good fun. I know there were some interesting experiences when we were living in the outside wall of Seebecker House, which looked out across an open grass area to Tripp. And of course the girls were in Tripp and guys were in Adams. And occasionally the girls would inadvertently or deliberately, who knows, forget to pull their shades when they were dressing or undressing. And the word quickly got spread around the rooms facing Tripp, a code system by which you could identify what window to look at. For example, somebody might open a door and shout down the hall, 4-6. And what that meant was on the fourth floor, the sixth window from the end, you should look at. Well, immediately all the lights were turned out and the guys would look out their windows to see what was going on across that room number 4-6. I remember that Sandy Bloom, who was our house fellow in Seebecker at the time, told us that he was over at a meeting with some of the similar people over in Tripp, and they were mentioning how difficult it was for them because of the proximity of the boys and the girls. And they looked out the window and said, now why can't the guys be as nice as your fellows are over in Seebecker House? Look, their lights are all out. And Sandy told us, he thought to himself, yeah, the only reason they're out is because they're looking at the windows at some of the girls in Tripp that haven't pulled down the screens. One semi-humorous experience that I can remember from sharing meals together in Van Hise was there was one girl whose name was Laura, who was particularly well endowed. And famous in advertising expressions at that time was lucky strike means fine tobacco, LSMFT. Well, one of the guys in our dormitories had modified that phrase to read Laura Sports Mighty Fine T blank blank S. And one time when we were sitting together in a table over at Van Hise, the girls were at one end and a bunch of guys at the other, and somehow the word got up, somebody started saying, and Laura was one of the girls there, and the word got around, LSMFT, LSMFT, and of course the girls, well, what does that mean? Well, one of the guys in our group, without batting an eye, just promptly replied, oh, that's nothing, that means lighter strings mean finer tennis. I thought that was a pretty quick response in what otherwise might have been a rather awkward situation. Clubs and organizations. As I mentioned earlier, I did belong to Alpha Kappa Psi, a professional commerce fraternity. That fraternity did not have a building of its own on the campus. It was strictly just a semi-social organization. We had monthly meetings, typically down in one of the meeting rooms at the Memorial Union, and spring dances and that sort of thing. My purpose in joining was to just become better acquainted with other commerce school majors, and that was a happy experience. I was glad I joined that organization. We had a lot of good times together, and it was a fun group of people. I did not belong to any other major organizations that I can remember while I was at the U. I did sing in the Glee Club before the war, but did not get involved in music in any way after the war. I remember reading rather regularly the Daily Cardinal. I don't know that I have any particular recollections one way or the other with respect to its content, editorial views, etc. I think like many other things in connection with Madison, it was sort of on the cutting edge of activities and viewpoints. There was a wide cross-section of students at Madison, both after the war as well as before the war, and I think it made for an interesting kind of an environment. Leisure time, it's hard to answer that question in terms of how much leisure time I had, but I certainly had enough so that I could comfortably and joyfully do the things that I wanted to do. We spent a lot of time down at the Memorial Union playing pool or playing table tennis. We used to have parties down there. As I say, our monthly meetings of Alpha Kappa Psi would be there. And frequently we would have dormitory parties down in the lower level of the dormitories where we lived. And unlike many other campuses, why, of course, we could have beer down there. Dating was always interesting for, among other reasons, that you had to get the girls in by 10:30 on Sunday through Thursday nights and 12:30 on Saturday and Sunday nights, if I remember. There was always a crowd up in the front of Liz Waters' dorm while the guys were telling the girls good night and that sort of thing. I did play in the Seebecker softball team in the dormitory league. We won the championship in the spring of 1946, if I recall. And that was fun to get to meet a lot of guys and enjoy that. I was not active in politics while I was in campus. I did attend some church services at a couple of the nearby congregations, but did not was not real active in any student groups that were present there. The prevailing attitude on the campus towards alcohol was pretty generous. We consumed quite a bit of it. We smoked. I don't remember ever hearing too much about drugs, either before the war or after the war. Maybe there were drugs present, but if they were, they weren't present even to talk about in the group that I was with. I did enjoy athletics, both before the war and after the war. I can remember the enthusiasm that was present at the football games at Camp Randall and the basketball games. I do remember there was quite a bit of dissatisfaction before the war with Harry Stuhldreher. I remember attending a couple of meetings at the Memorial Union characterized as, quote, goodbye Harry, unquote, meetings. I don't remember exactly the timetable of when Harry Stuhldreher left, but he was not a particularly popular coach. I don't ever remember having been discriminated against during my years at the U at Madison. Of course, I was white, and grew up in a town where we just didn't know any other kind of culture. Yes, at Madison before the war and after the war, we had Jewish students from the East. We had some black students. I don't recall any kind of discrimination. We lived together. We worked together. There might have been some grading of personalities, which I guess is par for the course, no matter who you're with. I don't remember any particular problem that existed before the war or after the war with respect to discrimination. Maybe I was naive enough in both time periods to be oblivious to it, but I don't remember it. Campus personalities, I don't know that I can come up with anybody that would fit that classification of any significance. We had some weirdos in our own particular groups, but they weren't particular campus personalities. I wasn't familiar with any activities of the Dean of Men or Dean of Women or the President or that sort of thing. We had favorite professors and not so favorite professors, but again, I think that was par for the course. I remember taking one course in music appreciation before the war. I don't remember the name of the professor, but it was a very, very enjoyable course. I remember that course we were studying Brahms' First Symphony, and I can remember very vividly the way he would describe some of the striding movements of the symphony. Very colorful professor, and we had a lot of times, good times. Of course, who can forget Bill Kiekhafer, the economic professor, and the skyrockets that used to precede every one of his lectures. We would meet in the lecture room at Music Hall, if I remember, for Econ 1A. This is before the war. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 9 a.m. And as he walked on the platform for his lecture, why, there always was a skyrocket spontaneously from the students, and I think he always got a big chuckle out of that. He was a very colorful personality. Of course, the skyrocket always ended with a Wild Bill, and I think that was the part that he enjoyed the most. I think as far as career goals are concerned, looking back, I graduated with a BA degree in accounting and went to work for General Mills. I had a number of job interviews at the Commerce School in the spring of 1947, and wound up picking a job with General Mills. Just retired 7 years ago after an interesting and satisfying career with them. However, I've looked back on the time of my graduation, and I still had some time left on my GI Bill. And what in retrospect I should have done is to have stayed in school, and there was no reason why I couldn't have, and gotten a law degree. One or two of my close friends were doing that, and as I have thought many times, somebody would have done me a great favor if they had put me in a corner and said, "Robert, we're going to keep you in that corner until you decide to go on and get a law degree." And I would have been grateful to them had they done that, but nobody did, and I didn't have enough self-discipline at the time to do that for myself. But just a PS to that, my younger son, who is now an officer in the Navy as an attorney in Japan, when he graduated from University of North Dakota, I kind of told him the same story. And I said, "Doug, I'm not going to sit you in a corner and make you go to law school, but I'm going to tell you, if you don't decide to do it, 25, 35 years from now, you're going to kick yourself all over the block for not having done it. And I'm going to just lean on you as hard as I can." So I helped him get... Sorry for that interruption. So I helped him get make that decision, and he did finish law school. And I think he was grateful for that. In fact, at the law school commencement, he said to me, "Well, I can thank you for this." And I think what he had in mind was thanking me for the subtle pressure to go ahead and finish. But I think back to that experience of my own. And at that particular point in the spring of 1947, looking at the growth and development that transpired in subsequent periods of time, if I had been really smart, or if I had been given a little stronger counseling by somebody, when my family or my peers or whoever, if I had just been smarter myself, I would have gone on and gone into law school, and who knows what might have happened in intervening periods of time. Just in the way of general reminiscing, I have thought to myself many times that the period of time at Madison in the early 40s, before I left school in March of 1943, to enter active duty in the military, that period of time I spent it was at Madison, the school year of 41-42, the school year of 42-43, were some of the happiest years of my life. True, the time was influenced significantly by the entry of the United States into the war after Pearl Harbor, but notwithstanding that, there was an atmosphere at Madison with a relatively small student population, which obviously could never be duplicated under the present circumstances. On the campus at Madison, there was much wide open spaces. Many more buildings have been built in the meantime. To a large degree, the campus was more confined than it is today, simply because it had a smaller student population. But the atmosphere on the campus was a good deal more relaxed. There was no density of people. It was a good deal more of a small college environment than it ever could be today. And I think back to those years before the war as probably a couple of the happiest years of my life. When I was still in high school, I kind of lurked in the shadow of my older brother. And I never really achieved anything on my own until I arrived at Madison in the fall of 1941 to begin more of a career on my own. And the blending of that with the atmosphere at Madison was very positive for me. I had a comfortable feeling in the classes that I was taking before the war and after the war. The only time I really felt intimidated was just coming back from the military in January of 1946, where we had to sort of pull ourselves up by our bootstraps to get back into the college environment after having been gone for some period of time. I was not an athlete in high school and certainly was not an athlete in college, but I was interested in sports and followed before the war and after the war the university football teams and basketball teams. I mentioned earlier about the one game against Ohio State. I'm quite sure that was in the fall of 1942. Wisconsin won 17-6, if I remember. But there were many, many other similar events, football and basketball, that linger vividly in my mind. I can remember one football game, and I think it was homecoming in the fall of 1946. I don't remember quite for certain who they played, but what I remember most about the game was the fact that in typical Wisconsin tradition style, before the second half began, the Wisconsin band was out on the field and formed a big W, and the band sang Varsity, and then the student section and everybody else joined in. And Ray Dvorak was director of the band at the time. And I remember that the officials were anxious to get the second half underway, but Dvorak would not leave the field with the band until they had gone through that tradition of forming a W and singing in Varsity. And from an observer's point of view up in the student section of the stadium, it looked like Dvorak was not going to yield, and he didn't. And he stuck it out, and I can still visualize that scene and singing it in my own mind. But singing at Wisconsin before the war and after the war was always a very popular event. I mentioned earlier about the Saturday noon lunches at the dormitory cafeteria when there was an afternoon football game. And there would always be a spontaneous amount of singing as guys were sitting around eating their lunch in preparation for getting over to the football game in the afternoon. That was just the Wisconsin way of doing things. I gave you one song earlier that we used to sing about life out in the dormitories, but there's another one that comes to mind. See if I can remember the words to that one. "'Twas an old winter's evening, the guests were all leaving. O'Leary was closing the bar when he turned and he said to the lady in red, 'Get up, you can't lay where you are.' Oh, she wept a sad tear in her bucket of beer, and she thought of the cold night ahead, when a gentleman dapper stepped out of the phone booth, and these are the words that he said. Her mother never told her what all young girls should know about the ways of fancy men and how they come and go. Age has taken her beauty, and life has left its sad scar. So remember your mother's and sister's boys, and let her sleep under the bar." That's typical of a number of songs that I can remember the guys would sing at dormitory parties before the war, AK Psi parties, spontaneously in the Ratskeller of the Memorial Union from time to time. Singing in Wisconsin seems to be just an ongoing tradition, and I don't sense that certainly in the games I've attended here at the University of Minnesota, either the outdoor stadium or now the Metrodome. The student response and participation just isn't on anywhere near what it always has been at Wisconsin. Listening back to this tape, one small correction. It's not really relevant to the Wisconsin situation, but I got home from overseas in late April of 1945, was back in the United States, and was here until I was discharged in early November of 1945. I guess on the whole, I don't have too much more to add to all of this. I don't know how fully responsive this has been to what you thought it was going to be, but at least it's one person's recollection of what life was like at Madison before the war and after the war. And I guess in summary, I would just like to reiterate what I said earlier, in that for me, the memories that I hold from the years before the war, and that isn't a very long period of time, really, when you think about it, just one school year of 41, 42, and then a part of a school year of 42, 43. But that period of time, for me, represents a couple of the most joyful school years that I ever encountered. I have great fond memories of all of the people that I knew, and the tremendous number of things that we did to enjoy ourselves and enjoy life at the university. And I would not have traded my life and my experiences at Madison for any other school. I'm glad I went there. I enjoyed the time before the war and after the war, and I really take great pleasure in thinking of myself as a good Badger.